Each year in the late spring, I plan our Sunday service topics for the next year. And among many factors that I consider are what are the sacred and secular holidays and events that will be surrounding various Sundays. And in planning our current year, we noticed that this Sunday was between Valentine's Day and Ash Wednesday, which this year will be on February 18th. So we wanted to explore the ways that the themes of those holidays might mutually inform and illuminate one another. We heard earlier from Danielle about the love drug and how love is much more complicated than can ever be contained by a wonderful, a terrible, or an indifferent Valentine's Day. And regarding long-term commitment once the love drug wears off, Fyodor Dostoevsky, because who does love better than the Russians, right? Fyodor Dostoevsky wrote in The Brothers Karamazov that love in action is a harsh and dreadful thing compared with love in dreams, that active love is labor and fortitude. Love in action is a harsh and dreadful thing compared with love in dreams. Active love is labor and fortitude. Maybe we should start reading that at weddings instead of Corinthians, the 13th chapter. But that's the sort of love, as Danielle said, that doesn't quickly wilt like cut flowers, but rather cultivates a garden. And it's that sort of loving, supportive, compassionate community, the garden that we're seeking to plant here. That's the sort of love that we hope to have and support one another with. For those of you familiar with the Christian tradition of Lent, how many of you grew up with a tradition that practiced Lent? Okay, a fair amount of you. The love drug would be akin to what many experienced during Mardi Gras, that final night of feasting and partying before the 40 days of preparation for Easter, which are traditionally seen like Dostoevsky's idea of love as a harsh and dreadful thing of labor and fortitude. For those not raised in a tradition that celebrated Lent, we're not talking about L-I-N-T. It's not your belly button or dryer. It's not related to this. It's L-E-N-T from the Old English word for springtime, which is related to the Anglo-Saxon word for lengthen. So the word Lent comes from the word for lengthen because the days are lengthening during that time, building in sunlight toward Easter Sunday, which is around the vernal equinox, the spring equinox, when the daylight and darkness are equal. And the 40-day period of Lent is traditionally a time of self-discipline, of self-denial, and self-examination in preparation for Easter Sunday. And it's an imitation of the 40 days that Jesus spent in the wilderness being tempted and tested prior to his baptism and the beginning of his public ministry. And of course, most of you that grew up with the Bible know that 40 days just means a really long time. Jesus in the Bible, a really long time. The Noah's flood, right? It rained a really long time. That's what 40 days means. So Jesus in the desert a while being tested. So, and Lent seems like it lasts a long time if you pick something particularly austere as a Lenten discipline. But given this year's proximity of Valentine's Day and Ash Wednesday, I'd like to invite us to consider a different perspective on Lent. During my years as a progressive Christian minister, before I became a Unitarian Universalist minister, I emphasized to members of the congregations that I served that Lent doesn't have to be a negative, sour, dour time. The point of Lent is not only an invitation to give up a bad habit. The point of that is to loosen our attachment to something that's unduly occupying our attention. That can be a good thing, but Lent can also be an opportunity to take on something that's positive and healthy, some sort of practice, such as taking time each day to slow, you know, all that time you freed up by, you know, not gorging yourself on food or not drinking alcohol or whatever you're giving up. You can use that freed up time to do something healthy. Slowly and contemplatively read from a sacred scripture, practice yoga or tai chi, or engage in any of the traditional acts of mercy, welcoming the stranger, clothing the naked, caring for the sick, visiting the imprisoned. Lent can be just as much about experimenting with 40 days of taking on a positive, healthy practice as 40 days of giving something up, or you can do both. And because we as Unitarians come out of that liberal Christian tradition, if practicing Lent might be meaningful to you, it's something you can do and reclaim and retrieve in a way that might be meaningful to you today. And we do celebrate Easter here most Sundays. I'll be preaching this Easter Sunday on the resurrection of Mary Magdalene, so stay tuned. But inspired by the tradition of eating chocolate on Valentine's Day, I also wanted to invite us to reflect on what it might mean to practice chocolate for Lent. What might it mean to take on chocolate for Lent as your Lenten discipline? It's a notion that I borrow from a Roman Catholic Bible study of the same name. Accordingly, how many of you have seen the film Laura talked about the book earlier called Chocolat? It's from a little more than 10 years ago. Okay, quite a few of you. Good. Starring Juliette Binoche. Binoche plays a mysterious stranger who in the mid-20th century moves into a small, repressed, religiously conservative French town. If you remember from the film, that town valued tranquillité, so they wanted everything quiet and repressed and buttoned up. And so she comes into this town and opens a chocolaterie, a chocolate shop filled with an abundance of gourmet sweets at the beginning of Lent of all times, a time that the town's traditional mayor feels should be a time of austerity and abstinence. Adding to the scandal, Binoche's character has a young child but has never been married, and she's very open about that. And she's not interested in attending the town's church, even though it's Lent. Now, I promise not to spoil the twists of the film for those who haven't seen it. Though films that are more than a decade old, I don't feel too bad spoiling it, but I won't. But the film does involve a band of gypsies, or better, Romani people, visiting the town, including one played by Johnny Depp, who you can guess becomes the love interest of Juliette Binoche. And suffice it to say that the conflict between the more conservative townspeople heats up when a relationship develops between this unmarried woman who's opened this chocolate shop during Lent, and when she develops a relationship with this Romani person who's in town, played by Johnny Depp. And all of this is happening during Lent, of all times. Even without giving you all the details, you can perhaps guess that this female chocolatier is the Christ figure in the film, which is another really sort of interesting way of reading the films, to see Juliette Binoche as the Christ figure in the film, because it is her kindness, her generosity, her compassion that transforms the townspeople much more that Lent than the harsh severity and self-denial of past Lents ever had. I do encourage you to see the film for yourself, but to share with you just one scene towards the end, there's this wonderful moment when the mayor of the town, who's been the leader of the opposition against the chocolaterie, and has been practicing extreme self-denial and fasting during Lent, hardly eating anything at all, he breaks into her chocolate shop on the Saturday evening before Easter with a plan to destroy all the delicious confections that she has created to help celebrate Easter in a kind of pagan way, right? Easter comes from the goddess Estra. Anyway, side sermon. We can talk about it later if you're not sure what I'm talking about. The mayor's concern is that her sweets will distract the people from celebrating Easter in the way he thinks it should be celebrated, which is kind of a traditional solemn ceremony with traditional theology as he sees it. But instead, after repressing his hunger for so many weeks during Lent, when he goes to destroy her chocolates, just a little drop of chocolate gets into his mouth, and then he stops, and then he gorges himself. Now, I won't spoil what happens when he's discovered Easter morning, passed out, covered in chocolate from having gorged himself in the chocolaterie. But I will share with you just one passage from the Easter sermon that the priest of that small town preached in the wake of witnessing this weeks-long battle among his parishioners about the meaning of Christianity, of Lent and Easter. According to the author of Chocolate for Lent, the film Chocolat is about much more than Lent versus chocolate, or self-denial versus self-indulgence, or traditional Christianity versus spiritual remedies. Rather, at a deeper level, this movie is about control and who has it. Along these lines, when I first watched this film, I was in my early 20s and still negotiating my way from the traditional Christianity of my childhood to the progressive Christianity of my early adulthood to what would eventually be Unitarian Universalism. And during that time, these words from that priest in the film Chocolat particularly stood out to me. He said on that fateful Easter Sunday, I'm not sure what the theme of my homily ought to be. Do I want to speak of the miracle of our Lord's divine transformation? No, not really. I don't want to talk about his divinity. I want to talk about his humanity. I'd rather talk about how he lived his life here on this earth. Listen, here's what I think. We should pay attention to his kindness, to his tolerance. I think that we can't go around measuring our goodness by what we don't do, by what we deny ourselves, and by what we resist, and by whom we exclude. I think we've got to measure our goodness by what we embrace, by what we create, and by whom we include. May we here at UUCF, both here collectively and in our daily lives, be known not for what we deny ourselves, by what we resist and whom we exclude. May we be known by whom we embrace, what we create, and whom we include. As we continue to reflect on these thoughts and where we find ourselves in these matters, I invite you to rise in body or spirit as we sing together hymn 354, We Laugh, We Cry. We've got a little more time, so let me tell you just a little more. Every time we end early, I've got more to say. Living in the D.C. metro area, we're really lucky to have such a robust arts and cultural scene, and I wanted to mention two things to you briefly. One is, it's only in D.C. now, but it'll be available more widely. My wife and I had a chance to go to D.C. to see a new documentary about the following up, while they're still alive and still with us, some of the really leaders of second wave feminism in the late 60s and early 70s. It's a documentary called She's Beautiful When She's Angry. And it's only 90 minutes, and it's a really powerful movie, both interview going back and forth between showing documentary footage from the late 60s and 70s, and then interviews today with these women and going back and forth. So it's a very powerful movie. As I joke, we saw it on Valentine's Eve, and only partially joking, nothing says love like second wave feminism. And it's profound to watch, I think, and thinking about, you know, what we choosing to emphasize, what we embrace and what we create and whom we include. You know, second wave feminism in the 70s changed our world. I mean, we're not there yet. You know, Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In and other books show how far we have to go. But it is, I mean, looking back, the one thing that I didn't know that really stood out to me is, I mean, such a robust, transparent signal of patriarchy is in the New York Times and other newspapers that job listings were genderized. That I didn't know that. You know, I mean, I certainly remember back when you couldn't have same-sex marriages in the New York Times. That I saw and witnessed in my lifetime, seeing that, those marriage announcements included. But literally seeing, this is the women's side of the page, these are the jobs that women can apply for, and these are the jobs that men can apply for in many other ways. That was changed by second wave feminism. So we stand on the shoulders of giants today, even though there is much work yet to be done. And remembering things like the need for childcare is still not there. That almost passed. You know, second wave feminists got it through both houses of Congress, you know, federal support for childcare, and Nixon vetoed it. You know, we almost had that, and it would have changed our world even more. And I think that piece has been forgotten a lot. So She's Beautiful When She's Angry, I recommend to you. Also, the Maryland Ensemble Theater, it's across from the Weinberg in downtown Frederick, has a play on right now called The Arsonist. It's funny, it's a satire, but it's also difficult to watch because it's so serious. It comes out of the 30s and watching fascism in Germany and everyday people not doing anything. And it's a very simple play about a homeless man who comes into this guy's house who's clearly an arsonist. It's fairly obvious from scene one, but the guy's just sort of in denial about it. And there's all these parallels to today with, you know, people who were partying with the Tsarnaev brothers that were behind the, you know, the Boston bombings, and people who, you know, Muhammad Atta for 9/11, you know, he was going to strip clubs before. So, you know, they were around and about in town. And so it's inviting us to think. The parallel that came to mind to me a lot was people are afraid to say that's racist. People are like, oh, I'm not racist. And in the same way you see in this play, oh, you're not calling me an arsonist, are you? That would be so offensive. But it's like, can we call things what they are when it's really injustices? That play is really wrestling with that. So I commend that to you as well. I'll end with this, that Danielle referred to the other ways of love that aren't always seen in Hallmark-style Valentine's Day. So I'll leave you with this Valentine's poem that I saw one of my friends posted on Facebook, and that, if I can remember it. Roses are red. Gender is performative. Mass market romance is heteronormative. And anyone that can rhyme gender performative with heteronormative gets mad props. So take that with you into this week. And as you go from this place, continue your journey walking in love. Care for one another and care for this one earth. Do justice and make peace. And as you go, know that whatever taste or touch you've had in this time of place, of hope, of love, of peace or joy, that goes with you out into the world. So live boldly and with thanksgiving. Go in peace.